Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th of September, Anno Domini 2009. That would be Mr. Stephen Ray's birthday, and one day before Mr. Dave Enright's birthday.
Three, 4 days after your birthday.
Nine days after my birthday. And we are Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff we can use right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And, of course, you know our phone numbers, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. I want to apologize to everybody in the in the IRC chat. It seems that the Greece School District is banned. I don't know why. I'm a little confused by that. All right. I'll figure that out later, fix that later. But right now we're not in the IRC chat. So, before we go anywhere, let's start with our poll of the week. It comes from, of course, I'm sure you've all heard this news. On Tuesday, Dell was ordered to pay a $4 million fine in New York for misleading customers about financing terms, warranties, and rebates on their PCs. Around the same time, Dell found itself embroiled in a civil trial in New Orleans involving that city's crime detection cameras. New York's Attorney General's office claimed in a suit filed in 2007 that Dell was deceptive and misleading in its advertising, and that as a result, some customers in the state were saddled with high credit rates. A year later, the state Supreme Court ruled against Dell, finding it guilty of fraud, false advertising, and other related charges. Dell was fined $4 million and agreed to change how it advertised its products as well as its financing practices. Dell officials had said that they had resolved many of the issues and customer complaints before the settlement. New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo was pleased with the settlement. Today's announcement is the final step in ensuring New Yorkers harmed by Dell's deceptive and illegal business practices are fully compensated, Cuomo said in a statement announcing the settlement. Going forward, this deal means that Dell will have to clearly and fully disclose the terms and conditions of their products and services to avoid this kind of fraud at the consumer's expense. New Yorkers who want to file a claim for compensation can do so at www.nyagdell.com, according to Cuomo's office. And Steve is going to put that up on our links list.
So. It is fully disclosed in that microscopic print at the bottom of the page.
Well, yeah. The case in New Orleans stems from the city's post-Katrina desire to put cameras in high-crime areas. Two companies claimed they had contracted with the city to supply the crime camera equipment in 2004, but the city officials, including Mayor Ray Nagin, reneged on the deal and misused the company's technology. The companies also claimed that technology officials in New Orleans conspired with Dell to allow the computer maker to sell their system commercially. Officials with both Dell and New Orleans denied the accusation. The trial, which began this week with jury selection, reportedly could run on as long as 2 or 3 weeks. So that brings us to our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And the question is, how do you feel about Dell service and support? And the reason I ask this question is because Dell says they fixed it. You know, that was back years and years ago, back in 2007, two whole years ago. So that they say it's been fixed and it's better now. That's, so I want to hear from you.
That's 20 years in computer terms, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, really.
The choices are great, it's okay, I'm not happy, I buy elsewhere, and I always buy locally. So you can do that, as I said, at our soundbites at our website, soundbites.org. So far we've got 43 votes, and I buy elsewhere is ahead, followed by I always buy locally, which is exactly what I like to see. Once you're done with that, of course, I know that that's not enough for you folks. You will want to say more. So if you look in the little yellow box underneath the poll and click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Very good, very good. And you can then enter your opinion. And the question there, of course, is what do you think What do you think of as good service and support? And four people have entered. Be polite. What Dell did 2 years ago and what they're doing today are two entirely different things. So, I'll just erase anything that I see that's just bashing on somebody that's silly and we're not going to stand for it here. So you can do that. So give us a call. And again, the numbers, let us know how you feel about that kind of service. Again, you don't get to be rude, but if you have a good or bad, Dell question, because it's in the news, that's the only reason we're going to talk about it, give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Outside the 585 area code, it's toll free, 1-800-790-0415, right here on Jazz, member supported Jazz 90.1.
One of the things we often tell people when they're calling corporate tech support lines is if you don't like the answer you're getting, hang up, dial again. You'll get somebody else.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'll probably get a different answer.
Yeah, there's no question. All right, shall we head right to the phones?
Let's do it.
Whoops. Our first caller is Walter. Walter, where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from the northeast corner of Greece. Very close to Charlotte.
Very close. All right, what's your question?
I hope you can give me a few minutes to do an autopsy on the problem that I had running ClamTK in Linux.
Okay.
We use Ubuntu 8.04, downloaded it, and, we looked at the Security Tango. The problem that we had is that in order to do the entire hard drive, check it,
right,
I went in under root to run ClamTK.
Right.
The machine went ahead and scanned it all. I set the choices for quarantining and ignore size and check hidden files. The clam came up and found 32 viruses.
Wow.
But here's the problem, in that I believe that they were all false positives. One of them was the GNOME Display Manager directory.
Right.
The GNOME Display Manager config files, the entire inbox of my wife's Thunderbird account, and a cache file that we never could figure out where that came from. The problem is now that once it was run by root, it removed by root, it was owned by root, and I did not know that. So when I logged off, the display was completely gone. I was now into text mode only.
It quarantined the display.
Yes.
Resources.
It displayed it. And according, luckily we have an old machine that we run software on, any Linux. It's an Ubuntu machine. And I had no problems running ClamTK before.
Right.
But I never did the full directory. And I thought, I could do it on our big machine. So luckily that old machine was there, and I was able to connect to the Internet and find that there were problems of false positives of the GDM and the inbox, looking for what they call phishing with the P,
right?
Heuristics. And that seems to be a problem that's been around for a couple of, maybe at least a solid year.
So maybe instead of flagging individual messages, it ended up flagging the whole inbox?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, took it all instead of
individual. Luckily, again, we had the machine, so we could go back and find exactly where it was just labeled a GDM.
Right, it's in user S bin.
Right, it could be anywhere. I mean, we were a number of places. So luckily, after a couple of hours of looking to research, we were able to go ahead and put things back. We can reinstall the GDM and the config files.
Right.
Once we got the graphics installed, well, then up came ClamTK. And then, now it said you could, reinstall because it's false positive. Well, instead, it then took it and put it on the desktop of root. So, we had to go into the command line to go ahead and find it and then transfer it back into my wife's Thunderbird account. we still can't figure out where the cache file came from because there's loads of cache, and looking at the data inside of it, it's like it's gibberish to us, and there's loads. I mean, I think we saw that there's at least 200 cache files all around. So we don't know where it goes unless it belonged to Thunderbird, but we couldn't tell.
And a lot of those cache files are in hidden directories anyway because users aren't supposed to find them. The program does it itself.
Yeah. Well, so far the machine's running fine, but where did I goof? Should I not have chosen to put anything into quarantine? Because once it did, root grabbed it, and it was held in root's directory.
Well, I do this all the time, and I didn't have that problem, so I'm a little confused.
Yeah, when I did a web search in the Ubuntu forums, there were people finding what the heck happened that GDM is gone. And
that happens occasionally in all the antiviruses. There was a problem with McAfee a couple of weeks ago where it flagged a critical Windows system file as a virus, and then Windows stopped booting. So it's the problem, and you mentioned the heuristics, it's the problem with the antivirus programs are trying to guess what is a virus before they know exactly what new viruses are.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they guess wrong. And the problem is because the bad programs act exactly the same as good programs who are installing, loading registry entries, mm-hmm. loading, you know, kernel patches, whatever, that it's very difficult to guess what is a virus versus what is a real program.
Right. In this case, from doing the research, it appears that my wife had some new Amazon accounts, and therefore it saw, from what I could tell on the internet, they have a tinyurl.com that will go ahead and lead you elsewhere, but Clam goes ahead and says, oh, that's a phishing malware that
there is, and
people have complained about that, and Clam has not address that situation.
There are a lot of these URL shortening services around that, you know, you want to send a YouTube video or send a link to a newspaper site, and it's, you know, 1,500 characters long. And so these URL shorteners let you send this mm-hmm. little tiny URL. Well, the bad guys are now doing the same thing. You know, here's a cool news story you should read, and you get a tiny URL that points to a malicious page. So it's the bad guys have taken over yet another thing that the good guys created, and it's very difficult to know what's good and what's bad.
Well, then, you know, as I see on the Security Tango, we should regularly check the entire hard drive. Should I now not choose to quarantine infected so I can see what there is, choose to have them?
That's probably the best thing to do at this point. Like I said, I haven't seen that yet, but they may have fixed that in between because when you boot your machine, every time you boot your machine, a program called FreshClam runs, which goes out and gets the latest definitions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to do that through root also to update it.
Right.
So I hope that would be corrected, but looking backwards, again, on the internet and the Ubuntu forums, I found that problem has existed at least 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just caused a problem. I have not wanted to try it yet, but it seems that, would you know with Clam, if I choose not to quarantine, but I have it look, you know, ignore size, check hidden files, I saw that it does come up with a list. Can I individually click each one to quarantine that one?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's the way. Because this way, what I wanted to do was, when I saw them, I thought, is this an error? What are these viruses? I've never heard of anything like this before. And when I went to do a search on using Firefox, it closed the terminal, and then that was doomed, and that was it. And so therefore I couldn't do anything on the machine because it immediately then went right into the text mode only. And as I say, that's where we were lucky we had another machine we could look at and do a comparison of the files as well as do an internet
search. You might have just got caught by a bug in the program that was updated quickly.
Hiccup. And
before
it just,
you got it,
Okay, so for now, then, it sounds like I didn't do anything wrong, but the smart thing to be is not choose quarantining the files because it ended up in root, and that was a lot of work to try
check
to find
each,
them.
Check each of the files before they're quarantined to make sure it's a virus or not. And that's hard to do, you know, Googling the file it finds. You usually can find what that file is, what it's supposed to be.
Right. That's what exactly we found out. And then adding the term false positives, you could find some stuff in the Ubuntu forums about the problems that people had. So thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. It's a continuing learning process, particularly with a machine, with an operating system that is new to most people, like Linux. As I remember in the early days of Windows, we had many of the same kind of problems. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Devon Murphy Photography. Devon Murphy Photography specializes in capturing the important moments of your life, including wedding, senior, and family portraits. For more information and to view the online portfolio, you may visit www.devonmurphy.com.
Introducing School Band, the virtual school band game. Just pop School Band into your DVD player. Pick a virtual instrument and pretend you're in a real school band, just like they used to have.
I'm playing the virtual tuba.
Keep music programs alive at your child's school. From arts education programs to physical activities, PTA can help enrich your child's life and learning experience. Join us today. Call 1-800-307-4PTA or go to pta.org.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Let's go right to our next caller, Linda. Linda, you're also calling from Greece, aren't you?
Yes, I am, right across from Park Ridge Hospital.
There you go.
How are you, gentlemen?
We're peachy. How are you?
Good. I've got a question for you. I've got Windows XP. Next to my clock, I like to put little icons, you know, so I know what they are. But if I go in to customize notification and I select always show and I click apply and okay, they never show up. What am I doing wrong? I've restarted my computer and everything, but they never show up.
What shows up instead?
Nothing.
You get no icons, not even the clock or the speaker icon?
I got the clock, but I want to put like my AVG,
sure.
The volume and all that, so I could just click on it. But
well, you have to tell each individual program to display in the
taskbar.
I
always show, and I click on that. Well,
not in that properties. Yeah. You have to tell each program, like AVG and the volume control, to put the icon in the system tray.
Like the volume control, you would go into the control panel under the sound. There is a little checkbox that you can say show on toolbar.
That always show in the taskbar properties, it turns off auto hiding. That if you don't use one of the icons in the system tray, it will hide them, so it shows fewer of. Which was a boon
sometimes
in the early days of small screens.
Yeah. I've never had that problem. I've always been able to go into customized notification and put always show, and it always showed.
Yes, it will show all the ones that it knows to put in there. But to get in there, you've got to go into each individual application to make sure that it's being displayed on the toolbar. Because all that, what you're doing there is it just says show all or none, or you know, hide.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with what is in to show or hide. Like AVG and the rest of them, within those programs, you can say automatically start and put it in the toolbar, which it should do automatically. Same with your volume control. If you go into the control panel under your sound, there's a checkbox that you can say, add this to the toolbar. Now, you can choose in the toolbar whether to show that all the time or not.
Okay.
One of the things you can do just as a test is turn hide inactive icons on and restart, and then turn it off and restart. And maybe it's just toggling the setting.
Yeah.
My comment about Dell. Dell's a great computer, but their customer support in India is terrible. That's why I'll never buy another Dell.
That's certainly what a lot of people are saying. There's no question of that. There's also,
Yeah, I'm seeing the same sort of reports you are, Nick. There are some people that have had this problem of missing system tray icons. A lot of them are pointing to the hiding and showing versus not actually there. Now, when the icons are hidden, there should be a little double arrow in the system tray to let you select a hidden icon. Does that work, and can you see the ones that you're missing? Because that would mean they're hidden. If they're not there at all, not even in the hidden section, then there's something else going on.
Okay, you mean, you know, because usually I was able to click on there, and it would the taskbar would open up and show all of them. Now it's not even doing that.
Right.
So they're not hidden, they're just missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So somewhere something turned off to display those icons.
Yeah, but I haven't been able to figure out where.
Probably a registry entry, of course.
Well, I'm not mucking around with that. Yep. Nick said not to.
Yeah, good for you.
Okay, I just wondered if you knew of a solution.
And you're in XP, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's the harder part. It's actually easier to fix in the... well, you can... Yeah, you can turn it off in RegEdit, but I don't know... Yeah, that's... You don't want to do that. Something else may have done that. Certainly in Windows 7 it's a lot easier, but... Yeah, I don't think there's any...
Yeah, I can't wait for Windows 7.
Yeah. Sorry, Linda.
That's okay, gentlemen. Thanks anyways.
Have fun. That's one of those things. Unfortunately, I'm not running Windows, and I probably should be. Get right down to it.
I've seen several...
Well, you're happy where you are. And...
I am.
I've seen several reports to disable the SSDP discovery service, fixing the icons showing up in the system tray. You go to manage your computer, go to services, go to plug and play, and disable SSDP.
Okay.
I don't know what SSDP discovery service does, but disabling it seems to fix not seeing your icons in the tray.
Well, and that's the important part, isn't it? That's the thing we're looking for. All right, let's go to another news item.
Wait, no. Before we go, I just want to make a comment. You know,
sure.
More or less thank Laurel Ann and Rob for Thursday night. I mean, that was one.
Laurel Ann does a tremendous job at everything she does. Yeah, Thursday night they had the wine and jazz. The jazz and wine tasting. I don't think we did wine and jazz tasting.
It was a third year for it.
And it was huge. They gave them.
SSDP is the Simple Service Discovery Protocol, and it automatically finds network clients. So if you're not sharing files on your network with other computers on your local network, you probably don't need this service anyway.
Right, and if you turn that off...
And your icons come back, safer. That'll fix the problem.
And there you go. But I'll tell you, we had an excellent time, worth every penny, every single penny.
It was.
And we had a real nice time, nice people, had a great thing. The wine was excellent. The beers were terrific. There's a Brother Thelonious Belgian style ale.
That was nice.
I have to stop at Beers of the World, pick some of that up. That was just excellent.
And what's interesting is it was the monk Thelonious, and there's a jazz great, Thelonious Monk. Did he get his name from the monk?
I think there was just a pun on the name.
Or his parents really liked that beer, too.
Exactly. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan. Where are you calling from, Dan?
The beautiful city of Rochester, New York.
Hub of civilization in the Western world.
That's why we live here on this salubrious Saturday.
You got it. What can we do to make you a happier man?
Well, I decided that I wanted to help the economy, and I decided to upgrade my monitor. Currently have a Dell PC. It's a Dimensions B110. And I currently have a 20-inch Acer monitor. So I went to the Dell website, and I noticed they had a pretty good deal on a 23-inch flat-screen HD. High definition monitor. Ordered it up and I received it. Got it home, hooked it up to my computer, and it's distorted. So I called back Dell, and after a couple of minutes, they finally, after I gave them my service tag number for the computer, they said that I have an integrated video card, AGP graphic video card, and it cannot go to the higher 19x20x1080 resolution that is required for this high def monitor.
Right. Yep.
So basically, I said, what about a driver? What about buying a new
hardware.
Video card?
Yeah,
no, it's integrated. It's part of the motherboard.
You have to buy
a new video card. What would Uncle Nick do?
Uncle Nick would probably go get a plane ticket to India and start slapping some people around.
Yeah, you have to disable the onboard video and buy a new video card to support that monitor.
Nick would do. Wait a minute, though. The key thing is, though, is how old the machine is. If his is only going to take PCI versus PCI Express.
That's the next question, is what expansion slots do you have? There's PCI, mm-hmm. PCI-X, and PCI Express, mm-hmm. and then 2.0 PCI Express, which I've been finding aren't compatible with 1.0 PCI Express cards.
Yep.
Pain in the neck.
So basically, I've got a nice 23-inch HD monitor that I got a heck of a deal on. Apparently, it was a real good deal.
It'll be really good for your next computer.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking, because I did contact them for an authorization for a return, but I have to pay for the shipping back, which was a free shipping coming to me.
And they
they charged me $15 for restocking, so
they
should have been out $50.
Yeah. Did you talk to someone when you bought this, or just straight on their website?
Well, I happen to have made the purchase directly from the website.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I decided to investigate this, and I called their, since I'm on their mailing list, I got a little catalog.
Yeah.
I ended up calling the toll-free number, and I asked the individual, would my computer accept a high-def monitor? And I have to say that that person, after about a minute on hold, came back and said, no, your machine will not.
See,
so they were honest in telling me that
the one
they were
good
not.
Thing about a
they
salesperson.
Basically said that my machine can only do a maximum of 1680 by 1050, and that's what I'm running right now.
Is HD, but that's HD for televisions. Mm-hmm. HD on computers is a lot better, yeah.
It probably
said on the spec sheet somewhere what its resolution was, but no one remembers to check the video card.
You have three PCI slots in that thing, so you could conceivably buy a card and put it in.
Well, that's one of my coworkers actually sent me a link to a company called USB Gear, and there is a USB 2 external graphics card for XP and Vista that can apparently go up to 1920 by 1200 resolution. But it's $90, all of a sudden now
and
my monitor, which was a deal, ain't going to be a deal.
And that USB device is really slow compared to a regular graphics card.
But
it's mostly intended for laptops who can't run a second monitor but have a USB port.
But see, it gives credence to the justification of getting a new machine.
Well,
you wait until October 22nd, which is only a few weeks away. You'll get a new Windows 7 machine with PCI Express 2, 8 gig of memory. Go for a terabyte hard drive. All you need is a case. You already got the keyboard and monitor. You're golden.
Yeah. I may end up seeing my good cousin Dave Enright there.
There you go. Now you're talking.
There you go.
Maybe I'll treat myself to a new Christmas present.
There you go.
Hey, one more quick question if you don't have any calls on waiting. I'm having an issue. For some reason, this last week, my Internet Explorer has been acting up as far as the pages not loading properly, where if there's supposed to be an advertisement or something to that effect, I get a blank box with a little X up in the corner. And it has something to do with the browsing history and maybe the settings as far as the cache.
It could be a privacy setting, too.
Pardon?
A privacy setting,
Wait a minute.
The plugins to not display ads.
You're not getting ads, and you're complaining about it.
Well, the web pages don't load properly.
Well,
sometimes it's pictures. Sometimes it's also pictures associated. For example, if I went to
a
local television's website and wanted to see a picture associated to with a news story that's posted on a television station's website, that picture does not come up, and I just get a blank box. Now, what I can do is I can go under my Internet properties, go and delete my temporary files and refresh the web page. Then everything pops up correctly. Quick question. There's another setting there. I'm looking at settings. It says temporary Internet files, and it's recommended that it's between 50 and 250 megabytes. Mine is currently set at 200. Should I adjust it up a little bit or lower it? And what about also the history? Right now it says days to keep pages in history, 10. Just want to see if any of you guys have Internet Explorer and what the settings are under Internet properties.
Well, the easiest thing to do is, one, don't use Internet Explorer. You'll never hear us.
I know. It's like you guys hate Chevys and Fords, so
it's time
to drive a Volvo.
I drive a Chevy.
I drive a Ford.
Okay.
At least for another month. Well, maybe not after today.
But it's not that we like the other browsers better. It's that Internet Explorer is dangerous to use because it lets through spyware, viruses, malicious software.
Now, apparently, in previous shows, you guys did acknowledge that you cannot technically remove Internet Explorer, and I'm not going to even try that. Now, is it going to be any kind of conflict issue if I downloaded Firefox and ran that?
Nope.
No, you can run 10 different browsers if you want.
I'm meaning that you can't run two firewalls at the same time. You can't run two...
Yeah, well, in this particular case, you can easily run both of them simultaneously, but you really don't want to run Internet Explorer. You just want to leave it lying quietly sleeping on your machine.
Right.
Less sleeping browsers.
For programs like websites like the Microsoft Update Server, which requires Internet Explorer.
DMV requires IE.
Right. So you can just download getfirefox.com. That's getfirefox.com. We'll give you a download for Firefox. Install it. It'll ask you a couple of questions. Do you want to import all of your bookmarks? Say yes. Do you want...
That's favorites.
Your favorites, yeah. Do you want Firefox to be your default browser? Say yes. And now you're on your way.
Okay. Now, in all fairness, gentlemen, could you answer the question? Should I change on the temporary Internet files the megabyte size from 200 to lower or max it out at 250, what they would recommend? Or
keep it in the middle. And as far as your temporary Internet files, you know, the dates keeping them, I'd say knock that down to maybe 5 days.
Okay.
It depends on how far back in time you want to be able to see your history.
None of that takes – how big is your hard drive?
1.25 gig RAM.
No, how about
the hard drive itself?
Like 320, 250?
80 gig?
I don't know. I have to look up the spec.
Well, here's what you do. You take a look at how big your hard drive is.
Mm-hmm.
You take a look at how much space you're currently using.
Mm-hmm.
If you've still got 40, 60, 80, 90, 100 gig, you could keep, you know...
Which is 100,000 meg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
right,
200 megs is nothing.
200 megs is nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it as big as you want.
Mm-hmm.
On one of my machines at work, I've got it set to a couple of gig. Just because, I've got a very fast machine, so it'll search it very quickly. You really don't want to go that high on a normal machine because it just can't search it fast.
Yeah, there's a catch-22.
But 200 gig, 250 gig is fine.
There's a catch-22 where searching the cache
is,
actually...
Let's see, 160 gigabytes.
So that's 160,000 megs, so 200 megs is an insignificant proportion of that.
Yeah.
But so don't worry about it.
There is a catch-22. If you have your cache set too high, it takes longer to search the cache than it does to download it in the first place.
How can I check for that one?
You're nowhere near it.
Okay.
We're talking about gigabytes of cache space.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Dan. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Interesting sets of questions because we really do, you know, these are the little things. People are now, they're kind of, some people, you know, the new users are one thing, but some of the people are past the point where they're doing the standard stuff, and now they want to start tweaking, they want to start playing, they want to start doing stuff. I understand that. Believe me, I understand that. That's an interesting place to be. It means that you've achieved the next step. In your in the ladder to guruhood,
getting up there, and hopefully,
what's a step beyond Padawan?
I don't know.
Apparently, just Jedi. George Lucas really couldn't think that far.
Jedi, and then Master.
Right. So it's a 3-step process to Master of the Universe.
Yeah.
Nice. Not bad, really. It's just 3 steps.
You were supposed to bring balance to the Force.
Oh, I thought you said ballast. I was confused.
Bailey. Yeah, dumb.
Some Baileys,
dumb.
Yeah.
Oops.
All right, we got time for a news item? We'll take another news item.
Let's do it.
People are snapping up new desktops and laptop PCs long before the launch of Windows 7, a sign of strong demand in the market, according to analysts. Demands for PCs improved in July and August, which is something special, because the expectation was that many people would delay purchases until after Windows 7 came out in October. Customers often wait until after the launch of a major new operating system to buy a new PC, for fear of having to pay for the upgrade and to avoid the hassle of loading the new software themselves. This time, strong marketing of free or discounted Windows 7 upgrades for new PC buyers ahead of the official launch of the OS on October 22nd appears to have worked. There were also fears the global recession might continue to affect PC demand. PC shipment growth declined for 6 straight months from the beginning of the fourth quarter of last year through the end of the first quarter of this year as the global financial crisis slammed world markets. Sequential growth returned to the second quarter and will likely continue for the rest of this year as the global economy continues to recover and Windows 7 launches. So what we're seeing here, business has been so strong in recent months that shortages of a number of components have become troublesome, including LCD screens, laptop batteries, and chips such as double data rate third generation or DDR3 DRAM. Indeed, Converge, a chip and component distributor, says shortages have also emerged for a number of key microprocessors. The rising demand suggests the peak season for PC manufacturing has arrived, and it appears healthy. Converge said in its monthly newsletter, the company warned that the shortages will increase price is. So give us a call. Are you planning to purchase a PC before the launch of Windows 7, or have you already bought, or are you waiting? Give us a call. We'll talk about it. You don't even have to have a question. Call us at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, 1-800-790-0415. We are more than just answering questions. We are also here to chit-chat about your ideas about computers, because we actually care. I don't know why, but we seem to actually care about what you folks would like to talk about. So we are going to take a break while you dial that phone. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you as we continue our headlong rush into our second 20 years as the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here every week on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound bites, celebrating 20 years.
When's the last time you heard radio in black and white? We're doing this in black and white to make a point about the Asian longhorn beetle, an insect that's killing our trees and taking away their color. We need your help to look for it on your trees and to report it right away. The beetle is also black and white, with very long striped antennae.
So let's keep our trees colorful. That's better. Help stop the Asian longhorn beetle. Look for it and report it. Learn more. Go to beetlebusters.info. A message from the USDA.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, 41 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Don't forget, give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, if you're outside the 585 area code, we are toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Going back to the news item you just mentioned about people holding off, I've got at least five or six folks right now that I've literally talked into holding off until October 22nd to get a new system. Because I keep telling them, why pay double for an OS?
Well, most of the vendors, and I think Microsoft has announced this, if you buy a Vista machine now, you get the Windows 7 free. But then there's the pain of having to upgrade.
That's the thing, and yeah. It's not clean and fresh. And as we've always told folks, you know, it's better when you're going to do something like this to start out with a fresh, clean machine.
And it's a month, for Pete's sake.
And why get into it? You know, all of a sudden build up your emails and all this other stuff. Now I got to back it up, turn around, wipe that out, put it in, and reinstall everything. Whereas if I just wait a few weeks, I can get the machine with Windows 7 on it, plenty of memory, everything else, and you're going to be good to go. Because, I'm sorry, it's buried in there somewhere. And, you know, then the cost of that you got to pay, if you're not comfortable doing it yourself, to pay somebody else to switch it over for you. You know, sure, you're getting the OS for free, but big deal on that. It's going to turn, you know, cost me, a couple hours more in labor to wipe everything and reinstall it. And then, on top of that, getting all the correct drivers. That's going to be the other issue. Whereas if you get already pre-installed, they're already going to have it with all the drivers on that particular machine.
There's sort of the implied promise that it'll work. Until you add your own stuff.
But. No, it will work in the basic mode. But then if you go under Device Manager and look at, you know, all your devices, it's using just a generic video card, or the, you know, no sound. It's missing this and this and this. And it's like, now I got to go and hunt for all those. And hopefully I got another machine that I can still get to the internet to find them.
That's right.
So, I mean, there's a lot more to that than just, you know, doing that.
And so I'm trying to get onto the IRC chat, but I believe this set of IP addresses has been banned.
Or it's not the proxy server filtering chat clients?
Exactly. Well, it might be.
Might be that.
Might be. All right, kiddies. That music tells us it's that time again. Grab your footy jammies.
Didn't Dave just rant?
Yeah, I know. This
we have a new rant.
Get the footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake, it's time for story hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
All right. Now, this rant is to some low-down, pond-scumming, sucking person. And I got to think it's a younger person. That it's unbelievable.
Here we go.
All right. And I know it's trivial. But I have had this one little case. It's a little plastic case sitting on my counter. It had dirt in it. And somebody stole my dirt box. How low can you get when you steal a dirt box?
Seriously, they stole that little plastic box.
That little plastic.
Little transparent cube of dirt.
Yes, that I have had for over 15 years. And over time, you know, I found unique things. I found, you know, different bugs. And I've grabbed that and put it in this case. And it was a nice little. Some person stole it.
Somebody's an idiot.
And I'm thinking, you know, it's got to be some kid.
Yeah, probably some little kid, actually.
You know, grabbed it, you know, oh, this is cool, and took it home, and then throws it out.
Yeah.
I've had the thing for over 15 years.
Yeah.
And it was a good demonstration for folks to say, why should I clean out my machine? Well, this is just some of the stuff that could be in there.
So if you stole Dave's dirt, please take it back to him.
How low can you get? You got to steal dirt.
Well,
I
what likely happened was some
young kid.
Sure
it wasn't the birds that took it all?
No.
No, it's inside. I bet some young kid took it, and at some point thought it was so cool, and took it and started bringing it home. And then at some point, mom found it and thought, what kind of nonsense is this, and tossed it without asking him.
Yeah. And that's something, like I say, it's just a sentimental thing that I've had over 15 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had unique stuff. Because folks sit there and see these bugs. What's that in there? And I tell them, you know, that's really in my machine. I go, yeah. And I had some samples of cat hair or dog hair crammed in there, too. I mean, it was only a case, maybe 2x2. But that just stunk.
That stinks.
I mean, because I hit him and go, Sam, where is this? She goes, what? I said, the plastic case.
And it's been there all the time, and you never know when it went missing because you don't notice it anymore.
Well, like I say, right. I had it when I was down at my old shop, Brighton Henrietta Town Line Road, when I was down there for over 12 years. Because we started it up right away. We thought that was cool, you know, because we were going around cleaning machines, and folks, oh, this is what could be in my... And we kept adding to it.
Yep.
And, you know, we just added to it over the years, and it just sat there, and it was a cool demonstration. Like, for the longest time, I used to have a hard drive. And I had that broken apart to show folks
right.
The platters and that. Until, again, some kid or that plucked up the actuator arms, and they were pointed up, and it's like, oh, jeez.
Some people don't know any better than to ruin things,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. But that just ticked me off. I mean, to steal a person's dirt box.
That is sad.
How low can you get?
That is sad. That is it. And how, I can't say that, but yes, absolutely. All right, that's poor Uncle Dave. We're going to give him his little shot now, put him back up on the shelf for another week, let him cry it out on his own, get your, rinse your hot cocoa mugs, get your footy jammies off.
And that's darn right dirty.
And, not so much anymore. You're going to have to start a new one now, and you're going to have to, like, glue it to the countertop.
Yeah. Get a taser to it.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. What's this? That'll work. I'm pretty sure that's illegal in this state and possibly every state. But, it is. It's tough nowadays. You leave something out and somebody's gonna light finger it. I don't know why.
I guess I do. That's a naive part of me. You know, I mean, I can't take something else that doesn't belong to me, or if I haven't paid for it.
Right.
That's
right.
Just the way I was brought up. Call it old school, call it old fashioned, but, you know, that's just the way I am. If I can't afford it, then I don't buy it. It's not mine.
Yep.
I have a right to steal somebody else's stuff. And I don't care how petty any it is.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. I even feel bad if I take pens home from work.
Mm-hmm.
I always bring back, oh my God, I have this, bring back the next day. That's the way I was brought up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Can't help myself.
Different moral setting.
Can't help myself. All right, here's another, this is a great one. With Windows 7 launch looming, a company executive this week denigrated its predecessor, calling Vista a, and I quote, less good product. unquote. The comment won't surprise many analysts and most users who have condemned the 2007 operating system as bloated, slow, and bulky, but it's the furthest any high-level Microsoft executive has gone in criticizing Vista. What people underestimate is the importance of good or bad products, said Charles Songhurst, Microsoft's general manager of corporate... I'm talking about a Microsoft person and I'm not doing my... Richard Nixon voice. What people underestimate is the importance of good or bad products, said Charles Songhurst, Microsoft's general manager of corporate strategy at an investors conference on Tuesday. And sometimes your products are good, sometimes the products are bad. And I think Vista is less good product for Microsoft. Windows 7, on the other hand, is much better than good, according to Songhurst. Windows 7 is an extremely good product. From Microsoft. It is brilliantly developed, and I think people probably underestimate the effect of the bad products on the good products. This is why I don't do voices for a living, by the way, just so you know. In the past, Microsoft's top managers have limited their public criticism of Vista to oblique comparisons with the new Windows 7. For example, last October, CEO Steve Ballmer called Windows 7, Windows Vista, a lot better! A month later, others, including... who heads Windows development acknowledged mistakes had been made with Vista, but swore they would not be repeated with Windows 7. Songhurst also dismissed the idea that Apple and Google, with their Mac OS and Chrome OS respectively, pose a threat to Microsoft's dominance in the operating system market. Apple has two very big structure advantages over us, Songhurst acknowledged. The first is its vertical integration. There's always the quality of experience you can do if you go vertical that you can never do as a horizontal player. As for Google's Chrome, Songhurst was just as optimistic that Microsoft would be able to fend off that rival. Because the Chrome OS doesn't exist yet, it's hard to say much about it, Songhurst stated. The quality of Windows 7 is the best defense we have in this space, Songhurst said. When Windows is executing well, Microsoft is in good shape. So what do you think about the OS wars? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or 1-800-790-0415. Do you actually care about the OS wars, or are you just using whatever operating system you use because you already know it's the best, or it just happened to come with your machine, or whatever the reason is? Let us know. Give us a call. In the meantime, we have a call from John. John, where are you calling from?
Hey, Nick, how you doing? Calling from Rochester, New York.
Okay.
And I thought I heard the tail end of the IE8 and the thumbprints. When I pull up my Google web news page, I'm, like, missing the thumb pages, too. So I don't know what the deal is for that. But that's not really the main reason why I was calling. One of the main reasons why I was calling is I've got a question as far as, like, Windows 7. I'm running primarily Linux, but also, too, I picked up a laptop from Lenovo and with Vista on it, and they have a free Windows 7 upgrade program, and I'm, like, about a month from... where within the time frame of which they're going to do the Windows 7 upgrade. And I was wondering if it's worth it as far as talking with them and working out a deal to see if I could still get part of the free upgrade. Is Windows 7 better than Vista? Is it even worth the trouble?
Well, it's certainly better than Vista.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's no question of that. As to whether or not you enjoy running Windows, that's something else entirely. If you want to wait for that upgrade to come out and give it a try, there's certainly no reason not to, particularly if the laptop is not your main machine.
Right. No, predominantly I'm running a dual boot with Linux, so, you know, the Windows is something on the side that came with it. Also, too, would it be possible to run like Vista and 7 on different partitions of your primary hard drive?
No, that's going to be nearly impossible to do well. Microsoft is not really interested in you running two different versions of their operating system. So there are some things that they just don't do well in terms of making that happen.
Two separate hard drives will work.
but not two partitions.
Okay, we're talking about a laptop. So, okay, hey, thanks a lot. So basically, if it's not too painful to be able to get an upgrade on Windows 7,
I'd insist on Vista.
I wouldn't run Vista personally. So,
Okay. You
know, get that Windows 7 upgrade. If they've got it and you can get it, go for it.
Cool. Hey, thanks a lot, guys, for your
You're
help.
Welcome.
Appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye now.
And do us a favor, folks. Just like that person, we're helping them out. You know, if you tell a friend about us, you know, that we're over here now. We're at member-supported Jazz 90.1, answering your computer questions every Saturday from 12 to 2. We're not going to be bumped because of sports or, you know, ice skating figure contest or girls' field hockey or ping pong.
Nothing wrong with girls' field hockey.
No, I'm just saying, but we won't be bumped for those events.
Right.
I'm sure they're very good sports, archery and everything else, but we're just going to be here.
I love archery.
It was so cool last time we had the Olympics because they had all the stuff that they don't televise, which are all the sports I'm interested in, judo and archery and stuff, and they had them all online, so I was able to watch them online. So that was kind of fun. I enjoyed that. But yeah, we have a great number of people who are looking at that upgrade and wondering if they should do it. If you're upgrade, well, and here's the thing: if you're upgrading from XP, you kind of have to because they're going to stop supporting it, and you're not going to be getting any of your security updates. If you have Vista, really, really upgrade. Really, seriously, really, no kidding, upgrade. We have an email question. Mike from Penfield writes, I don't actually have a problem. I'm just interested in your opinion regarding the 1 gigabyte World Wildlife Federation Penguin Blue Bootable Linux USB drive available at Amazon for about $8. I wonder, I understand that it will boot Ubuntu to an XP computer. Could this be a great way for someone who's unfamiliar with Linux to try out this operating system without disturbing anything else on their PC? Yes, actually, cool. That's a great thing. Oh, anyway. P.S. Love the show. Listen every week on your archive section of your website. Learn something new all the time. You had me very interested in Ubuntu or Linux in general. Keep up the good work. All of you. Thanks a lot, Mike. That's very nice. Yeah, I'm a big fan of those bootable drives. There's a link to it that Steve...
It'd probably be a lot faster than a bootable CD.
Yes, much faster. You can run Linux from a bootable CD, but running it from a bootable USB will be somewhat faster. The problem with the CD is that it's ridiculously slow to begin with, and it's compressed. So not only do you have to slowly load things... But you then have to slowly uncompress them. So things run a lot slower from that live CD than they would from running the thing. Now, a USB drive is also slower than a hard drive generally, but still it's much faster than the other thing. So, yeah, absolutely. I would suggest that that if you can find something like that USB drive with Linux already on it, Ubuntu is an excellent distribution, then you should definitely, it's only $8. Give it a shot. Well, with shipping, it's probably up to 40. Yeah. But give it a try. It gives you the option to try a new operating system without having to jump in and reformat your machine or change your hard drive or do any of those sorts of things. And what's really cool about it is that it means you can bring your... any machine that lets you boot to the USB port, you can bring your entire laptop or your entire desktop with you and boot it from there and keep all of your files and everything else on it. If you get it on a 4 gig or 8 gig drive or whatever, then you have plenty of room for your files on top of everything else. It's a pretty good deal, actually. All right, what's our next...
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought we had a caller. I beg your pardon.
No, I'm going to wait.
Turn your mic on.
You ought to turn your mic on.
We're coming up on the news. We're about a minute and a half away that we got to go to the
news. All right, we'll wait then. That's all right with me. And I'm sure it's all right with the person who's holding because they're patient and good human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's
absolutely true. I told her we were coming up on the break. And that we put her on right after. She's just fine.
Our listeners are
fantastic, and that's why our listeners have to tell other friends. That we're here and get the word out.
Yeah. Since the move, a lot of people say, I'm sorry you're not on the air anymore. I keep saying, yeah, actually we are. You just have to, find us is all there is to it. So we need you to get the word out. We need you carrying signs and banners and get on the Jazz 90.1 website. Buy a T-shirt.
You need to put a big logo at the top of the screen now on Jazz 90.1.
Oh, yeah, I do. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Especially now we have our 20th anniversary videos on there. That Jazz logo is really
low. Yeah, folks got to go check that out. I mean, that... collage of photos.
Yep,
is very good. Some great pictures. And it was a great time, anyways.
We had a great time. It's right on the front page of our website at Jazz 90.1 at soundbites.org. Hello, hi. Yeah, the video is linked there. Devon Murphy The photographer did a superb job with that little collage, and all the pictures are wonderful. So if you get the chance, definitely check it out. Definitely take a look at it and see what we did. It was a fun afternoon. I have to say that it was even more fun than the wine tasting, which was actually a pretty good deal. But we had just barrels of fun, and it was so great seeing people that we, you know, had never met before or hadn't seen in a very long time. And it was really pretty doggone cool. We were pretty pleased. All right, that music tells us we're going to take a little bit of a break. It's going to be a slightly longer break because we have it's the top of the hour, and Dave needs a longer break, apparently. he's not a great mime, but I got that one. So we are going to take a break. And everybody got the back of it from the camera, if anybody's watching the camera.
Oh, yeah, my best side.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm Nick Francesco with Dave Enright and Steve Ray. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
We're sitting in live with Helen Borgers.
Sitting in with Edmund Velasco here at Steamer's Cafe in Fullerton, California. And when we began the interview, there was one table full of people, and now the whole place is filling up as we are getting ready to hear Edmund play live with his quintet plus one. And that plus one is Chris Williams, who is... The owner just tripped over us. Terrence Love, we can bring you in. You want to sit down?
Sure. Hello, dear. How are you?
I'm okay. This is Terrence.
I'm tripping, right? Over your microphone.
Terrence Love is one of the great supporters of jazz music. In fact, tell me how you discovered Edmund Velasco.
It's been, you know, by the way, October 15th, we'll celebrate 15 years here at Live Jazz 7 Nights, and Edmund was one of the first guys that came in on sax, maybe about 6 months or so after. I don't remember which band he played with.
It was with, actually, I was sitting in with David Sills.
Oh, Dave Sills, another great tenor sax player, and, you know, I just fell in love with him, and I heard a lot of Bob Berg through this man and some other things like that, and you know, it's been a wonderful marriage ever since, you know.
Terrence is the reason why I have my own group. He encouraged me to come by after hearing me with Dave to the jam sessions. So that he was hoping that this one band that ran the jam sessions would hire me as their sax player, which they did. And I played with them for about a year. You know, about 6 months into it, Terrence says, "Look, do you have your own band?" And I said, "Oh, yeah." He goes, "Great, this is your date." And I said, "Okay, I'll be there." Of course, I didn't have a group. And I didn't have any music.
The first of many lies, right?
Yes.
There's more information on the website, sittininjazz.com.
Hear a full hour of Sittin' In with Helen Borgers every Friday at noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Susie Orman here with a message from the FDIC. Recently, I got a letter from a woman who took all of her money out of the bank and put it in a shoebox. You know what I told her? Put it back in an FDIC member bank now. If you stay within coverage limits, you can't lose a penny. Go to myfdicinsurance.gov and click on Edie the Estimator to make sure your money is safe and sound. That's Edie at myfdicinsurance.gov. The more you know, the safer your money.
If you're stuck on an island and you have to have five things, what's one thing that you would have? Mine would probably be a radio. I can't live without the radio. Yeah.
New artist Josh Hoag. Talking about radio.
I actually still listen to radio all across the country, so just to kind of stay current, and that's where I discover a lot of new things that I like.
Radio, always there, always something special for everyone. Go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites as we hurl headlong into our second 20 years of the show. Before we go any farther, let's go back to the phones and we'll talk to Judy. Judy, where are you calling from?
Hilton, New York.
Lovely Hilton, New York. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm sort of coming with my hat in hand.
Uh-oh.
Only because... You know, most of the people I've been listening to, folks, for a while.
Good for you.
And I'm picking up little pieces of information. But being a senior, not too many seniors call in. So I decided, well, why not?
Why not?
Huh? Nick is a senior now.
I am. I've been a senior for a while now.
And I've got my AARP card.
Do you?
Yeah.
You're a puppy still.
I think the whole world has an AARP card.
What do you have to be, I think, 11 now to get one?
Oh, Lord.
Dave, who is celebrating
You forget who controls the buttons here.
Yeah, that's right. Dave's birthday is tomorrow, and he's going to be officially old.
Older.
And Steve's birthday is today. He's
Happy birthday, Steve.
That was my point. You know, it's not the age. It's the brain matter that matters.
Oh, in that case, yeah, I was old about 30 years ago. Yeah.
Well, as I was always told, it's mind over matter.
Yes.
You don't mind, it don't matter.
I have no more mind, so it doesn't matter.
So, you know, I'm one of those that you were mentioning earlier that might want to, you know a little more and do a little tweaking here and there, but I don't know what I'm doing, so I don't do anything. Anyway, so I have some, like, not complicated questions.
Sure.
Did you guys used to put out this... leaflet thing called the computer that you could pick up in the grocery store?
Computer Link? That's still around. That's our friend Justin Zimniak.
Yep. Uh-huh.
He does a great job with that, and it's available all kinds of places around town.
Because I go into Wegmans, like, and I never see it anymore, or even Tops.
It seems to be have gotten spotty over the last little
while.
There are some Wegmans that I still see it in.
One of their distribution carriers is having... Issues.
Issues.
Oh, dear.
So it's still there, but...
Yeah, their website is techny.com, and you can actually subscribe to it, so they mail you a copy directly. And they have a list of distribution centers where you can get copies.
Okay. So where could I go if I was out driving?
Well, if you go to techny.com and look up that list of distribution sites, it'll tell
you where you can
get
it.
All over the county.
But why? Why not just have it delivered right to your house?
Yeah, I probably will because I found that very useful.
It's a great thing. They've got a terrific lineup of guest columnists, and our friend Chris Reich is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
A whole bunch of good people, really good people. I'm not going to start mentioning all of them because then I'll forget somebody. And Justin does a great job reporting the news, and it's just an excellent publication.
Right. And if they had still been out, I probably would have already known that this version 7 is coming out, and the first I have heard of it is today when I heard you on the radio here. So I'm getting a little nervous. I got XP home. And I must have 6 or something, because...
Nobody knows where the Windows 7 came from, because when you count up all the version numbers, that they don't come to 7 as being the next one.
They just picked 7 as a lucky number.
Yeah.
His luck's running out. He's got to do something after Vista.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so my question is, if they're not going to support mine, do I got to go to 7? And how do I get it? And am I going to have to pay for it or know what?
Well, if you're running XP right now,
yes,
the support for that's still going to be around for, what, another 6 years?
Well, do you know what service pack you have?
Because that's
the Service Pack, the Prime Service Pack 1 have already been dropped on service.
Uh-huh.
But with Service Pack 3, they're still going to support that for a while.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you're good for a while.
You'll certainly get the security updates. Eventually, they'll stop giving the other updates. But for a while now, you're still good.
Okay. Well, I have Roadrunner.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes with CA, I think.
Right.
Okay, well, I know a little bit anyway.
There you go. There you go.
And I signed up for automatic updates.
Good for you.
Yeah.
There
so
you go.
Usually I'm in good shape with that.
Well, there's two sets of automatic updates. The Computer Associates automatic updates are for your antivirus.
And the spyware.
Right, and the spyware. And Windows updates, automatic updates, are based right in the Windows operating system.
I see.
So you should have both. And
there was another question I was going to say then. If you have one, do you need the other?
You need both because the Windows updates update the operating system itself, and then the CA updates update the Computer Associates virus and firewall.
Oh.
Now, the other thing is, if you run a lot of non-Microsoft programs, those all have updaters built into them, too. At least some of them do.
Mm.
And you have to make sure that those are running. So it's a long and involved process to update everything under Windows and the Mac.
Yeah, so mostly I have CA, and then, but once in a while I have Windows sends me a little... dot on the icon or something.
Yep. That's how it works.
You know.
Yeah, about once a month or so, you get the Windows updates.
Yeah. So I should hold on to that.
Yes.
And install those when they come out.
Yep.
All right. Well, if I think of anything else, I'm so glad you guys are there.
Well,
I don't have
tell
who
a friend.
Am I going to talk to?
Tell
you know?
A friend.
We're the one.
I know it.
That's what we like to hear.
Pass the word around.
I will.
Thank
I will.
You.
Thanks, Judy.
Thank you so much.
Have fun. See, that's why we're here. People can feel comfortable calling up and asking questions that maybe they wouldn't feel comfortable asking someone face-to-face, someone they don't know. But we come into your living rooms every week, and we're your pals. All right, we're going to go to our next call, and it's Santana. Santana, where are you calling from?
Parrington.
Parrington, New York.
It's not Carlos, is it?
No. No, I loved your last album.
No.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, two questions. Okay, I heard that the XP, you can hold on to it for another few years, and that shouldn't be a problem.
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up there. I didn't hear that well.
Yeah, you can stay with XP for another few years, and that shouldn't be a problem then.
Right.
As long as you have Service Pack 3 installed.
Right.
Okay, all right. The next question is, I'm running a Vista 64-bit system now, and... I hate to just. I know you advise to make a clean install, but I got so much junk on there. To reinstall everything else is going to be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just hit the upgrade?
What's safest?
A utility that can clean up everything else that Vista left in.
No.
Well, here's the thing. The problem is the registry. There are programs like Revo Uninstaller that will clean up the registry for you, but nothing does a 100% job. And if there's something not right in the registry, that gets pulled into the next version of Windows. So you immediately start out behind.
And especially if you started with like 98 or ME, and if you've upgraded to XP and upgraded to Vista, the more you've upgraded, the more crud there is.
Right.
So it's safest to do a clean install, but that's the most annoying thing to do.
Right.
So have a really good backup. Try the upgrade install, and when that doesn't work, restore from your backup and do a clean install.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Sorry, Santana. I know that's not the answer you wanted to hear, but sometimes it's the answer that's important, not the answer you want to hear. Upgrading is a very difficult thing under Windows because everything is in that registry, and if any piece of the registry is corrupted, it can have an effect on everything in the registry, and it's a sad thing. But you know, you ask us what you could do or what you should do; those are not necessarily always the same thing. All right, our next caller is Vic. Where are you calling from, Vic?
Rhonda Quaid.
Too bad it wasn't Victor; it would have been symmetrical. What can we do for you?
Well, for that woman that wants that magazine, I work in Gates during the week, and they have the copies of that magazine at the Gates Public Library on Buffalo Road. So if she wants to take a ride there, it's available.
Yeah, there's a lot of distribution points in Gates. There, yes. The TechNY website has a lot of them listed in all the different towns.
My program is about zone alarm.
Mm-hmm.
When I check my programs, it gives a thing on the top. It says access and server. And you've got three choices. You've got ask, allow, and block. Now, I have four programs that if you change it, they say you're going to crash your system. And I'm wondering if I can change them or should I leave them alone or do I have to change them? One is LSA shell. And the other one is a unit user int logon application and Windows Explorer and Windows NT logon. Should I just leave them as a question mark, or should I change them, or is there any advantage?
Well, those are all critical Windows system components.
But yeah. It says if I change it to allow, it says it could crash your system.
Yeah, that's a generic warning. If you allow anything to go through the firewall, then it could crash your system. But you need to allow some of these Windows services.
Right. Is your machine running fine?
Oh, and it's perfect.
Then leave it alone.
Okay.
I mean, that's really the best. That's the best test right there. Of course, the other thing you should definitely do is, of course, dance the security tango to make sure that your machine is fully clean and that it because sometimes a virus will disguise itself as a legitimate Windows program and try to do things. So run the dance the security tango and make sure that your machine is clean. And then once you know it's clean, anything that needs to get through should be allowed to get through, because that's how Windows has to run.
Okay, no problem.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vic. Yep, we're definitely at a point in our Windows usage where we're getting slightly tougher questions these days, and I like that.
Yep.
It's good to run Zone Alarm, and it's good to know what it is that it does. And I would much rather people call us up than just blindly start clicking on things to see what's happening. Our next caller is Rich. Where are you calling from, Rich?
From Rochester. Hey, Nick, it's Richmond. How you doing?
Hi, Richmond.
I love how technical you are. If it works, leave it alone.
Well, tell me that's not what you do every day.
Oh, every day.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right.
Hey, question. First of all, you put the question out there, do you like DOS wars? I love it, because that's the only way us as consumers are going to get good stuff and, be able to move our different platforms forward.
That's right.
But, number two, I've noticed that they're not selling any systems out there with more than 4 gig per core on our processors. Is there a reason for that? Like I'm looking at like dual cores, quad cores. It doesn't matter what it is. The number of cores on your system totally, they won't give you any more than 4 gig of memory. Is that because the cores are 32-bit or something? I just noticed that.
Well, if the cores are, if it's a 32-bit machine, then really it's 3 gig.
Yeah,
3 point
per
something.
Core, 3 point yeah. something. Yeah. So it's 4. So yes, anything more than that would in fact be wasted. But
you need the 64-bit OS to run more than that.
Yeah, I know that.
And more RAM makes it more expensive, and in the PC market, cheap is better.
Right.
I was looking at buying servers, because I was upgrading servers, and I noticed that if I had a quad core machine,
mm-hmm.
right. This is what I did. I bought a system board with two, that I could put two processors, two quad-core processors in it. But it only recognizes, it seems like, 4 gig per core of those processors. Now, there's supposedly 64 gig processors, but everywhere I look, and I've been looking online, it seems like is that an artificial limit? Or is that a real limit to those cores, or what? Have you guys noticed that?
Well, it's a real limit in that the chipsets they're using to connect the CPU to the RAM have that limit. So that's, in a sense, that's a real limit.
And RAM is really expensive when you get up into mm-hmm. the higher capacities.
Right, and so...
Yeah, believe me, I found that out.
Yeah, and
DDR2.
So...
DDR2.
Right, and
well,
so...
Well, the 4-gig DDR3s are like $700 each.
Yeah, right, and so what they're doing is they're just... writing, creating these things for the middle of the road, in some cases for the lowest common denominator. Now, that said, a server with 16 gig in it is a pretty decent server.
Right. I agree with you totally.
So unless you're doing some super high-end, and of course knowing you may well be needing that, but unless you're doing some super high-end stuff, a 16-gig server, 16 gig of RAM in a server should serve you for an awfully long time. You can load whole databases into RAM.
The other weird thing is if your server uses the Nehalem-based Xeon, it uses a triple memory bus, so 3 matching RAMs is fastest. But because marketing people like to have 4 slots and 8 slots, if you fill all the slots, it actually gets slower.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at Apple's server page. Their configuration they recommend at the very high end is 24 gigs, which is six 4-gig chips, two right. banks of three, and that's $3,000 for those for
yeah,
six 4-gig
right,
chips.
Right.
4-gig DDR3s are really expensive, but yeah, so it's, some of it's the memory bus too.
Yeah, but then oh gosh, it's crazy. But then it seems so. That seems to me like there's like, but you like you just said, you have the four, you have the four memories, you have the four slots for your memories. Almost like you got those two slots, they're almost wasted.
Yes, they
and
are.
Because that becomes a feature checkbox.
Yeah.
This motherboard has three slots. This motherboard has four slots. The second one must be better.
Right.
Never mind what really matters is that filling four makes the machine slower than filling three.
It's a fight between the engineers and the marketers.
Right.
Oh, gosh. So they should have, in reality, they should have, like, 8-gig SIMs, and then they use three of them.
Right.
Right. And in probably 6 months they will, and those will be $5,000.
Right.
And in a year, they'll be $4,000.
Well, right. But the prices do come down, but that's yeah. kind of the way it has to work, Richmond.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at fine local member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bob Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Small World Bakery, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations. So carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Would it be crazy if you packed your bags and left? For a week, a month, a year. What if you left for 2 years? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And after another far too short break, excuse me, I have a mouthful of sesame seeds, we're back with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, hurtling into our next 20 years on member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's 22 minutes after the hour, and on the phone we have Gary. Gary, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Greece, actually just down the road.
Hi.
First of all, I'm glad you guys are back on the air. I wish I could have made it to the party, but, well, oh well.
Yeah.
I have sort of an add-on comment to the discussion just a few minutes ago about updates when the lady was calling. Steve said to just go ahead and do the Windows automatic updates. I've heard that Internet Explorer 8 is less than desirable, and if you just do it, the automatic updates, I think you're going to end up loading IE 8 because they include it as a quote critical update.
Right.
Yeah, it used to be optional and then has become automatic and critical.
Yeah, because so many people said no.
But so, well, what you can do, and this is what I said after that, is you can go, instead of just doing the express, you can go into the custom.
Yeah, but average folks aren't going to know what any of that means.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm just, you know. Yeah,
well, but even if you
can tell, can't you tell IE or Windows that you don't want your updates automatically loaded? You just want to be notified that they're there?
Yes, you can. You can set that up. But the other thing is, if you're one of the many, you know, Firefox now has, I think, achieved more than 50% of the marketplace, hasn't it?
Oh, Firefox a whole lot
so
better.
So if you upgrade and don't use Internet Explorer, it doesn't matter. The only time it ever gets used then is for certain updates from Microsoft themselves.
Okay.
And then it runs in the background.
Okay.
Yeah, as of August 2009, Firefox has a 47% share. IE8 is 10%. IE7 is 15%. IE6 is 13%, people still using. Chrome 7%, Safari 3%, Opera 2%.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right.
No, thank you.
People were still using IE5 as late as June of 2008.
There's still people
it had
using
half
it.
A percent of the market.
I know there are still people using it. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
That was an excellent thought-provoking question. Thank you very much, Gary.
One person was still IE5.
Yep.
And the big thing with the automatic updates is to know what the real program looks like. So know what that little Windows pop-up looks like. Know what the Apple pop-up looks like. Because there's a lot of fake programs on the Internet that pop up and say, you know, you need this update. And it's actually a virus or spyware or something like that.
Well, and I keep telling people there's one easy way to at least start protecting. It's not foolproof, but it's a great way to start protecting yourself, and that's to change the color scheme on Windows. Windows comes with that blue border across the top. Personally, I find blue on every website and operating system be grotesquely boring, but okay, I'm just tired of it. But it comes with that blue border. If you go into Personalize and change the color scheme, and then you see something pop up with that blue border, you know it's fake.
Just don't do the hot. Do they even still have it? The hot dog?
It depends on which operating system you've got, yeah.
That was the ugliest color scheme going.
We had one of our administrative assistants who used to change her color scheme based on her mood. So if it was red, you just didn't walk up to her desk. you just stayed away.
Sweet.
Apple actually removed a lot of that customization from the Mac because they didn't want people seeing gross screens and getting turned off the Mac completely. So, of course, third parties put back utilities to make your screen as ugly as you want.
Exactly. And that's the thing that annoys me. It's my screen. I ought to be able to make it as just ugly as I want to make it.
Yep.
So that's okay. Speaking of Apple, it turns out that Apple's iPhone 3.1 OS fix of a serious security issue, falsely reporting to Exchange servers that pre-3GS iPhones and iPod Touches had on-device encryption, wasn't the first such policy falsehood that Apple had quietly fixed in an OS upgrade. It fixed a similar lie in its June iPhone update. Before that update, the iPhone falsely reported its adherence to VPN policies, specifically those that confirm the device is not saving the VPN password, so users are forced to enter it manually. Until the iPhone 3.0 update, users could save VPN passwords on their Apple devices, yet the iPhone OS would report to the VPN server that the passwords were not being saved. The fact of the iPhone's false reporting of their adherence to Exchange and VPN policies has caused some organizations to revoke or suspend plans for iPhone support. One an anonymous person at a large government agency described, wink, wink, described the IT leader there as being bitten by the change after taking a risk to support the popular devices. I guess we will all have to start distrusting Apple, said another anonymous person at a different agency. Last week's iPhone OS 3.1 update began correctly reporting the on-device encryption and VPN password-saving status when queried by Exchange and VPN policy servers, which made thousands of iPhones immediately non-compliant with those policies and thus blocked from their networks. Only the new iPhone 3GS has on-device encryption. Apple's document on the iPhone OS 3.1 update security changes neglected to mention this fix, catching users and IT managers off guard. Worse, it revealed that Apple's iconic devices have been secretly violating such policies for more than a year. And that's been an interesting argument that people have had. Apple is just not an enterprise-level company, they're saying. They just don't get enterprise. They don't understand the needs of the enterprise. And by lying, they've caused an awful lot of people to risk break-ins and theft of information, data, and intellectual property from their companies. And I think rightly so, a lot of security people and administrative people at various organizations are really seriously ticked off about this.
Yeah, the CEO says, I want an iPhone because it's cool, and the IT people have to tell them, no, you don't, because it's not secure enough.
Right.
That's why.
But it used to be, yes, it is secure enough, and then they blatantly went off and, you know, used it in airports and used it on the plane and used it in hotel rooms, thus giving everybody access to the corporate secrets.
Right.
Very, very bad. Very, very bad. So our question to you is, do you use an iPhone at a company that's concerned with security? Did your iPhone stop talking to Exchange or your VPN system? Give us a call. We're at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, outside the 585 area code, 1-800-790-0415.
It's funny. You know, you talk about the iPhone. My friend Scott, who called last week down in South Carolina, he is just beside himself. He's just trying to figure out different ways to justify getting the iPhone because he is a gadget freak.
Yep.
I mean, he just put, matter of fact, these antennas up that he can broadcast his signal out into the middle of this one field. He could be sitting out there with his his wireless on his four-wheeler or his golf cart and pick up the internet.
Well, you can't argue with that.
Well, he did it mainly because he's shooting the signal from his place over to his folks. And, you know, it's really wild.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I know a number of people. Remember the time we got the phone call where this kid wanted to string a wire through a forest to his friend's house?
Yep.
I thought that was a very clever idea.
Now you get a cantenna and beam it.
Well, unfortunately, you can't go through a forest with that because the trees will get in the way.
Yeah.
If you need line of sight.
Got to find the tallest tree and point at that one.
Yeah, exactly right. So that's the way that's got to work. All right, our next caller.
Take a drill and cut a hole through
every
tree.
Every tree. And the holes have to get progressively bigger as you go. All right, our next caller is Cliff. Welcome, Cliff. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Greece. How you doing, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Not too bad. Listen, Nick, I know you covered this in your Sunday thing, and I read it, but all of a sudden I turn on my computer, and it comes up to ask.com as a default page. How can I get rid of that? I mean, I don't know how it came up.
What browser are you using?
Well, actually, I have both on my laptop. I got internet and Firefox, and it comes up on both.
Okay.
The easiest way is to go to the page you want to use as your default homepage, and then go into your browser's preferences, and there should be a button that says make this my default homepage.
Yeah, usually it's the first tab, and it'll say use current page in IE. And I think also Firefox. It'll say use current page. So whatever page you're on, it'll use that now as your default page.
Okay, so just go into
What probably happened
tools,
is
options.
Well, here's the other thing.
Tools,
it may also be in Internet Explorer 6, the best way to do this is this way. If that doesn't work, first try that, but if it doesn't work, then go to the control panel.
Right.
Internet properties.
Okay.
General. Search settings.
Settings, yeah.
Set new default. And change it from ask.com to, say, google.com.
Yeah. Okay.
In Firefox, open a new tab or a new window.
Yep.
Type about:config with no spaces. About:config, C-O-N-F-I-G. Hit enter. This brings up the all-powerful settings of Firefox.
I like the warning there that says, make sure you know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's a warning to me that you could mess things up. So click agree to that because we're going to be very careful.
Okay.
Using the search feature there, look for keyword.url.
Dot U.
D-U-R-L.
D-U-R-L, okay.
Hit enter, and it'll bring it up. Double-click that, and there's a thing that says change keyword.url string.
Okay.
And change it to http://www.google.com/search.
Or whatever else you want.
Right. Question mark Q equals.
Okay.
So that should, and then of course, you know, okay your way out of that. You have to put in that whole thing for a search query.
What probably happened is at some point in your surfing, you went to ask.com and it made itself your default homepage.
Right.
So a lot of browsers will lock your homepage, so you may get an error message when you try to change it. Something is trying to change your homepage, and you have to let it.
Right.
Because there's bad programs that try, too.
And I know that you can go into tools, options, manage search engines, but unfortunately that often doesn't work if something has set it specifically. The next thing, and just before you do that, it's not a bad idea to empty your cache, both in IE and in Firefox, because sometimes there's a JavaScript program in there that actually does the changing back.
Okay.
So definitely do that. But unfortunately, a lot of people do have that problem. We see it all the time. And there's no, you know, I wish it were as easy as click here, click here. But it's not that terribly bad. So, and the good news, of course, is that this is a podcast and will be available online very shortly after the show. So through iTunes. And so you'll be able to download it and listen.
Okay. So, I mean, it's just like a automatic thing that happened automatically. Or you can keep it at ask.com.
It's supposed to ask.
What you want, but.
Yeah, it's supposed to ask you if you want to change your homepage, but sometimes they don't.
And you
didn't see it and just clicked OK.
No, I mean, I turn off my computer at night, and I turn my laptop on, and there it was on both Firefox and Internet. And I said, you know, because I got both of them on my thing.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. Okay.
All
right, thanks for your help.
Yep. Fortunately, it's a good program because there have been a lot of malicious programs that change your homepage to itself. So when you try to change it away, it's running in the background and changes it back.
Yep. And then if he finds that that's happening there, then he's got to use he's got to dance the security tango to get rid of the virus.
And Cliff, do us a favor. You know, you found us, and you know everybody's here saying, you know, thanks for coming back on. That tell a friend. Yeah, we got to get the
heck,
word
tell
out.
An enemy.
Yeah, tell anybody, you know, you talking computers and that, you know, please get the word out. That's what we're trying to do right now. Get the word out, and folks say, well, I can't pick it up. Well, you can, because if they go to our webpage, soundbites.org, that's Y with a, soundbites with a Y, who was it? Francis would like us to know. We have a link to the Jazz 901.org website where you can listen to us. And if you really want a scary moment, you can even watch us live on the webcam. And the guys are waving. 10-second delay, but they're there. And, you know, like I say, tell the friends out there. You know, we're here. We're back in... it's a lot of fun, even if you don't know about computers, but they can even listen on their computer if they're out of range. I mean, we've got folks in Nebraska, South Carolina, down New Orleans, all over the place listening.
And, of course, we've got the podcast. You didn't send me the information. I'm fixing the, it. So
I found 8 gig RAM chips, DDR3 RAM chips. They're about $900.
Is that all?
So in your Nehalem-based server, you should put 3 at a time. There's a quick $3,000 for RAM.
Tuesday night, I was at an event for a vendor, and there were some Microsoft people there. There were 3 different people who, at 3 different times during the evening, pronounced Nehalem in 3 different ways.
Yeah, Nehalem. Who knows?
And the third way was, I think, Nahalem. I don't have any idea how it was pronounced.
Nehalem suggestion.
It was kind of cool. All right, have I got time for a news item?
Yes, you do, sir.
Yes, I do, sir. Microsoft filed lawsuits against 5 companies on Thursday, accusing them of using malicious advertisements to trick victims into installing software in their computers. Microsoft is suing DirectAd Solutions, Soft Solutions, and 2 websites that are just a random sequence of characters. And another company called iMeter, saying that these companies have used ads to distribute malicious software or present deceptive websites that peddle scareware to unsuspecting Internet users. According to a blog posting by Tim Cranston, the associate general counsel with Microsoft. Scareware is malicious or ineffective software. It is so named because buyers are usually scared into buying it with fake messages that tell them that their computer has been infected. These products have been around for years, but in the past few months, they've become a major problem. Over the weekend, the New York Times was tricked into running a Scareware ad on its site by scammers, pretending to be with Vonage, a legitimate telecommunications company. But Scareware ads are popping up everywhere these days, security experts say. Typically, when a Scareware ad pops up on a victim's screen, it looks like a Windows utility running with some kind of security scan. It will then warn that it has found a critical security problem and direct the victim to a website where they can buy a product to fix the issue. When the victim pays, the scammers then deliver useless or even malicious software. Often they also use the victim's credit card number for further fraud or to steal their identity or try to hack into somebody's machine. In addition to pushing malicious ads, these scammers have also been poisoning Google search results lately. To do this, they keep track of hot search topics and then use search engine optimization techniques using software to create a bunch of links to their malicious pages so that their pages come up first in web search results. When the victim clicks on the fake search results, they're taken to a website that pops up the fake Scareware system scan. Recently, they've hijacked search results relating to South Carolina Congressman Joe Wilson, the U.S. Open tennis tournament, and actor Patrick Swayze. They've done Michael Jackson and, you know, whoever's in the news right now. Today, most Scareware sellers operate outside the U.S., making it hard to stop them. Certainly on a state level, it's become almost virtually impossible. They're multi-million-dollar enterprises, they're criminal in nature, and they span multiple continents. Cranton wrote that Microsoft hopes that the filings will help deter malvertising, as they call it, malvertising. Isn't that great? In the future. So give us a call and let us know. Have you been caught by these Scareware malvertisers? Yes or no? Give us a call at, say it with me, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415. And let us know what you have discovered about malvertising. They're nothing if not rich in language in the computer world. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at fine local member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bob Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Small World Bakery, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations. So carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
The worst pain I've ever felt came from shingles. As a healthy, active woman in my early 60s, it kept me from sleeping at night. It made it hard for me to work and enjoy my active lifestyle. I didn't know a simple vaccination could have helped me avoid getting shingles.
This is Dr. Susan Rehm of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, reminding you that vaccines can help prevent shingles and other serious adult diseases. Speak with your doctor about vaccination and visit www.adultvaccination.org.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion, 10 p.m., right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can see on our homepage the clock for how long we've been on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very cool number. I actually got a screenshot of the 20 years, 0 days, zero cool. hours, whatever it was. So it was pretty cool. Before we go any farther, Another news item, along with the controversy of its Google Book search settlement, Google continues to wheel and deal with its Google Books service. On Thursday, the search and web services provider agreed to provide 2 million non-copyrighted book titles for on-demand books printing and cutting using its high-speed Espresso book machine. The Espresso book machine is a book printing machine that pumps out complete, professional-quality paperback books in 5 to 10 minutes. The machine, which book retailers, libraries, publishers, and other interested parties may purchase for $75,000, rapidly prints, binds, and trims a single paperback book with a full-color paperback cover. Google Book titles offered via the Espresso machine will have a recommended sales price of $8 per copy, though the price is subject to change by retailers. On-demand books will get $1 of each sale, with another $1 going to Google, which will donate the proceeds to charities and other nonprofit causes. On-demand now gets to offer these 2 million titles on top of the 1.6 million titles it already offers to consumers and to bookstores, libraries, universities, and other retailers. Through the agreement, Google gets a new vehicle with which to deliver its book titles to brick-and-mortar retailers instead of solely consumers online. We founded Google Books on the premise that anyone, anywhere, anytime should have the tools to explore the great works of history and culture, Google Books product manager Brandon Badger said in a blog post. Brandon Badger? Sounds like he's a book character himself, doesn't he? And then, kids, Brandon Badger hid under the log until Freddy Fox went away. Reading digital books can be an enjoyable experience, but we realize there are times when readers want a physical copy of a book. However, on-demand may have access to sell more works if Google's book search deal with authors and publishers passes muster with the New York District Court in October. This deal would grant Google unfettered access to digitize and offer out-of-print works to readers for fees. Several parties have come forward to proclaim support for and rail against this deal. So our question to you is, would you buy a book from a kiosk like that? Let's talk about it. Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or outside the 585 area code, 1-800-790-0415.
I read a really cool book this week on Escape Pod, Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore. And Google played an interesting and creepy role in it. The disclaimer on the book is rated G, but may contain creepy imagery and disturbing data visualization.
It's amazing, you know, playing with the mind.
Yep. Right? Yeah, it was an interesting book. It was spawned by a Twitter message and then put in a blog and now made into an audio book. It's really interesting.
And coming soon as a movie.
Coming soon as a movie.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I
who's going to play the lead role?
I have mentioned, is it a male or a female?
Male.
Oh, then it's going to be Keanu Reeves.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, in my iPod, I don't generally read things on my iPod because my eyes are old. On my iPod Touch, not my iPod, it belongs to RIT. But I have the entire works of Shakespeare. I have the Constitution of the United States. I have CourseSmart. You can actually download textbooks if you're, you know, faculty or student, whatever, mm-hmm. and you've got that deal. And then a product called Stanza, where I can load all kinds of books into it. And I've actually been reading the works of H.P. Lovecraft, which is why I'm not sleeping well at night anymore.
Well, yep. Evidently, there's no wireless in this building.
No, there isn't. And we need that fixed, yeah, by the way.
I was sitting here trying to...
I can create, if you warn me ahead of time, I can create one from my computer.
That's true.
Well, I've just been playing with...
Yeah, the reality is I have enough stuff to do during the show. I shouldn't also be playing on my iPod. Yeah. I think I'm good now. Thanks.
Well, this is the thing. You know, thanks to Steve, I got my iTouch from him through the Jesse Group. And this is way cool. I mean, this thing is so much fun.
It's amazing what you can find. In fact, the Apple slogan, there's an app for that, is showing up in other marketing advertising, and in fact, even the U.S. government now has created an app store at apps.gov.
Nice.
And you can buy apps for your business, for your personal, from the app, nice. The government app store.
Well, I found out because this will sync with Outlook.
Yep.
Turns out my calendaring program, which I use within the office, I just got the upgrade for that. That will automatically sync. Well, that will sync to Outlook. So now I got literally my whole calendar.
It's a full PDA in addition to a media player and game computer.
Well, onto this, and that's mainly what I'm using it for, is the calendar, my contacts, and along with keeping track of my mileage.
Yep.
I mean, but all the other apps, I mean, you could go blind trying to keep up with it.
Well, that's one of the problems.
I haven't even gone through even a tenth of them.
That's one of the problems on the store, is that there's so many apps, it's hard to find good ones. And there are top 10 lists and top 25 lists, but with 50,000 apps, it's hard to, you might not be able to find the one you want. There's so many. There's too many apps.
There's too many apps. There is an app for that. I've been looking, and this is only preliminary, I've been looking at a new product, a new game that came out called Rock, Paper, Airplane. And I'm just way too much fun with it.
Rock, Paper, Airplane. Scissors, Lizard, Spock.
Right. This is just Rock, Paper, Airplane. But it's very cool. And I just want to take a half a second to talk to those of you who download the podcast. We've already had 341 people download the last week's podcast since Sunday, which thank you all very much. But we're missing our friends in Japan, our friends in the U.S. military, and in fact, our friends in Canada. Why have you not been downloading our podcast? And for those of you who are downloading our podcast from other places, please feel free to tell all your friends and get them to download it too. It is a free download from the iTunes store, and so we would love to have you join us on the podcast if you can't get us live or through the stream, which of course you can do, but I suspect that, you know, in Japan or in China or in Iraq or wherever you are on that side of the world, you know, you don't really, most of you aren't going to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to get the podcast. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Although they have really, really fast internet in Japan.
Yes, they do.
The crappy hotel internet you get when you go visiting is 20 megabits.
Yeah, right, and that's the cheap stuff.
Yeah.
I want fast internet, please, please, out there, please, please. Yeah, fast internet now, please. All right, our next, please, I'm going to
start
whining again.
From reading what's around the country, in Rochester, we're a lot faster than the rest of the country.
We are a lot faster, but we're not fast enough.
Never fast enough.
We're slower than Buffalo. We're slower than Syracuse.
Cablevision in New York City just announced a 100 megabit line for a lot of New York City.
See that? The heck?
Yep.
All right. We have some catching up to do. Don't let New York City beat us. Call me first. I'll be happy to beta test it for you. Our next caller is Jim. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, Eric. Where are you guys from? Were just talking about the iTouch, and I downloaded the update that was available, you know, after the...
Yeah, the new version 9, yeah.
Yeah, and when I did that, now when I look at my email and I'm looking at, like, a forward, it doesn't... It used to, you know, it would open the forward, you know, the content of it. Now it just shows, like, a little... you know, like a little letter, and it doesn't open it anymore. If I go on my, my regular computer, it'll open it up, you know, in the email program. I use, just the Roadrunner webmail, and it used to do it on the iTouch, and ever since I downloaded that new upgrade, it no longer opens those forwarded attachments.
Oh, so you downloaded the iTouch software, not the iTunes software.
Well, I kind of updated everything. Yeah. I did both. Yeah.
Usually, that's a preference. I'm looking at my iPad to see to view those inline images because it takes longer to download them. They may have changed the preference so that it doesn't automatically download the inline images or display the inline images.
Okay. Three guys looking at their iPads right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been playing around with all. I looked at all the different settings I could find, and I really couldn't see anything that changed it.
Let's see, there's a preview, how many lines you want previewed, how many fonts you want previewed. Load remote images, on or off, so you can turn that on or off.
Oh, okay, and that's on the iTouch in the settings.
On the iTouch in settings under mail, yep.
Under mail? All right, I'll look at that then.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully that'll take care of the problem.
Yeah, that's also an issue with the iPhone users. If you're on the 3G cell network, you're paying for your data, unless you get one of the unlimited plans. But even unlimited means 5 gigs.
Well, right.
Right. It's unlimited throughput, but a download cap. So you can turn off viewing remote images so it doesn't download those images, so it doesn't use up your data plan.
Right.
We, yeah, a lot of people are complaining about it. What, I don't remember if I got to this news item last week or the week before. They're having a whole lot of trouble in some of the major cities like San Francisco and New York. AT&T network has been brought to its knees. Although iPhone users are only about 10% of the AT&T network users, they use 10 times as much data as everybody else. So they're constantly on their iPhones. They're constantly updating them. I mean, you get all these people who are like, where should we go to supper? Well, I've got an app for that.
Urban Spoon.
What movie should we go to? Well, I've got an app for that.
Flixster.
Where's the next nearest bathroom? Well, I've got an app for that. Google Maps. Yeah. So they're constantly on the thing. They're constantly looking stuff up. You know, it's I guess, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy that the thing is so well used. But the problem is that the network has been brought to its knees. People don't get text messages. Phone calls get dropped in the middle. And most of these are non-Apple iPhone users. So they're very, very, very unhappy. And AT&T is basically saying, I got nothing.
AT&T actually put out a video. They have a guy trying to explain what's going on, and they're investing billions of dollars upgrading the networks and adding more
That's
network
all they
bandwidth.
Can do.
Yeah, but at some trade conferences, South by Southwest down in Austin, 100,000 computer geeks show up, computer and music geeks show up, and the AT&T network died because they all had iPhones.
Yeah. And it's a real problem. That's so those of us who are on non-AT&T networks are actually better off phone calls.
Yep. One of the ironies is that when Apple went to Singular initially, which then got bought by AT&T, and said, we're making a handset, if it doesn't work, no big deal, because we're so small, and won't be a blip on your radar. And it works so well, it's really a problem for them.
Yep. All right. That music tells me that we're going to take another break, and we will be until next week. We're going to take a break until next week.
A really long, long break.
It's a long break, and we're going to take it for an entire week. That is it. Holy mother of pearl. This show just goes so fast. I want to thank every one of you who called in. I want to apologize to each and every one of you to whom we did not get. Please call in earlier next week. We've got 2 solid hours. Mostly interruption-free, so if you call in early, the chances are much better that you get on the air. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. As we wander through our second 20 years on the air, I want to thank all of you who've listened. And thanks for listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be back here next week at noon every Saturday because we all love you, and that's what it's all about.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.